whether a covenant is made with Noah or with Abram or with Moses or with Jesus.
Any covenant is a solemn agreement and is strikingly similar to a peace treaty that's signed when a lesser king surrenders to a greater king. Let me tell you what I've heard about how covenants were made in ancient times. There are some written accounts, and they often look like this. When the time has come that the lesser king realizes that he cannot defeat the greater king, he comes in unconditional surrender. The greater king is sitting on his throne, and the lesser king enters with his kingly robe in hand. As he enters the throne room, he must pass through some animals or people who have been cut in half. One half of the body is on the left, the other half on the right. The message that the lesser king is saying is, "May this be done to me if I betray your confidence in me." And the message of the greater king is, "This will be done to you if you do not keep your agreement with me." So he presents the train of his robe to the greater king, who accepts it and will add it to his own train. The greater the king, the longer his train, which is made up of all the kingdoms he has conquered. You might say that the greatest king of all has conquered every earthly kingdom, and his robe is so long that the train of his robe would fill the temple itself. Then the lesser king bows in homage to the greater king. This is no polite bow. It is complete prostration, lying face down and flat, completely vulnerable and defenseless. He kisses the feet of the greater king as an ultimate act of extreme submission. Psalm 2 says, "Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and you perish in the way, for his wrath is quickly kindled. Blessed are all who take refuge in him." The lesser king says words similar to these, "Behold, your servant, on behalf of my people, I say that we surrender wholly and without condition. We, my people, and I have been your enemies, but now we plead for your mercy. Our land is yours and all its people. Do with us as you will." The greater king has the option now of accepting or rejecting the lesser king's offer. He could step on the neck of the lesser king, or perhaps run him through with a sword where he lies there defenseless. After all, they had just been at war as all-out sworn enemies. On the other hand, he could choose to restore him and make peace. So the greater king bends down and lifts the head of the lesser king. This is not a time for shame or blame, but of reconciliation. Psalm 3 says, "But you, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory, and the lifter of my head." And the greater king says a speech like this, "Do not tremble or be afraid. I will be your king, and you will be my people. I will care for you and protect you, and I fully commit myself as your king." In the book of Revelation, it says, "And they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God." Then the two kings, the greater king and the lesser king, sit down to share in a covenantal meal together. The greater king has had his servants prepare the food, and the lesser king has nothing to contribute. He must trust that his former adversary's intentions are good, for he brought no wine taster for protection. And the two rulers sit and dine, one as host and one as guest, eating as if they were equals, but in the meal itself, proving in a very personal way that the one who gives generously is the superior person. This is an intimate exercise in learning to trust one another. You might say it's the dance of hospitality.
And now comes one final aspect of the covenant, which is to have a sign of the covenant. It could be as simple as a stone of remembrance, Ebenezer stone, or it could be a rainbow put in the sky, or there could be a written contract. It even could be something as simple as bread and wine. In any case, there is something to remind the lesser king that the greater king is committed to this covenant.